We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it doesn't take that long again. Go dogs.
It's the 100 Sanford podcast. We are back in the building. It is Lamar Lovelace. It is Graham Coffee. It's the big Super G himself, George Foster. Fellas, what is going on this evening?
Well, it's been a minute since I talked to you guys, man. How you been?
Hey, man, you look good, you know.
Hey, man, I'm trying my best, man.
You know what?
I'm back doing this challenge, this 40-day challenge. I think it's going to be 45 days this time. I'm struggling today. Today is a fruit fast day, and you pick a fruit, and that's what you eat today, and water. So I got these big jumbo ambrosia apples. They're so good. And so that's what I've been kicking in with today. And because I got to get some weight off, man. The weight I lost last summer, I put all that back on. All of
send,
it.
I've been
wilding.
Well, you know what? When you go to the natty, you know what I'm saying? When you party like we've been partying the last few months, I mean, it's bound to happen.
It's just been good, man. I've been wilding, man. Yeah, man. But guess what? The dog's still undefeated.
So it was all worth it? Is that what you're saying?
They lost a game in a long, long time.
Bro, 29 out of the last – oh, wait, no, it's – I think I saw the other day. They've won 33 out of their last 34 games.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
Going back to 2020, that's wild.
It's been pretty good, man.
Yeah, G, I need you to send me the 40-day, you know, 45-day challenge. Yeah, send it to me. Yeah. Send it to me. Because I'm struggling because, you know.
It's interesting. Like, it's tough, but you feel good, and you drop some weight. And if you got any other stuff going on, you drop that too. Blood pressure, A1C, all that stuff, you know. But it's tough until you get into a regimen.
Well, let me tell you why I would be struggling. I'm gonna tell you right now, because we gotta pay our sponsors, right? We gotta pay a little tribute to the sponsors. We gotta give a shout out to Vacay.
Yeah,
gotta give a shout out to Vacay. That's right, folks. You need to relax, unwind, take a vacay by elevating your mood with Vacay's premium Delta 8 products. Vapes, gummies, they got the sleep products, which are pretty nice themselves, and multiple flavors that'll help you relax in this crazy world we live in. Head on over to takeavacay.com. That's TakeAvacay.com. Use the promo code 100 Sanford and get 10% off your order. Vacay is here to relax your mind and increase your overall wellness. It has for me, but it also will help you put on some extra pounds because you're going to have a little bit of the munchies. So I'm telling you, be careful.
So the THC is not an appetite suppressant is what you're telling
me. It is not.
You fight it with every urge you have. Man. My wife looked over at me. She was like, "Why are you eating so much?" I was like, "Just be quiet. Just stay over there. Just stay over there." Yeah. I get up in the middle of the night wanting to munch and all kind. So I had to put it down for a little bit. But I'll take that 45-day challenge. But fellas, it has been a while since the last time we talked. Heck, we talked about if Todd Monken was going to leave. Well, Todd Monken has left the building. We didn't know that Glenn Schumann might be on the chopping block to leave. Not chopping block, but everybody calling him. The NFL is calling the dogs. He has since come back and, you know, took the little interview over at the Philadelphia Eagles, but he's back in the building.
There's another
quick coach. Thoughts on those two guys.
There's another coach that almost left, too.
Who?
Hartley. The tight ends,
Hartley.
Panthers.
Imagine.
After Thomas Brown got hired as offensive coordinator at the Panthers,
right,
trying to get
conversations that happened there.
Man, don't take everybody, man. It's bound to happen. You know, this is probably Schumann's last year with us.
Yeah.
So, I'm just glad we got You know what I mean? Because it's late in the game. It's late in the game. You don't want to lose a coordinator this late. You know what I mean? So I'm glad he's back with us. And just keep it going, man.
I think the thing that was surprising for me about Schumann, and it's kind of a testament to why you want to keep him, is you're talking about a guy that never played in the NFL and has never coached in the NFL, which, you know, obviously, I mean, George, you know better than any of us, like an NFL locker room and a college locker room are two very different places.
Yes.
And despite that, you know, he was still seen as one of the finalists by Philadelphia for who they wanted to hire for that job before he withdrew himself. I mean, they interviewed over a dozen guys, and he was one of the top three or four, which I think speaks to just how sharp of a football mind he is. Like, from an X's and O's game plan standpoint, there's few better. I don't think there's anyone better in college football right now, honestly, than he is.
Yeah, I heard he's pretty doggone good, man. I've only heard great things, and it's, you see it from the players on the field, and you see it from people in the profession. He's a sharp dude. He's one of the guys in this business. So we lucky to have him. Try to keep him for this last one. You know what I mean? And hopefully we got somebody in the chamber.
Yeah, I mean, Muschamp's still there as co-DC, right?
Yeah.
Like that's a,
yeah,
he's a stud too.
Yeah. But at the same time, he could be getting looks again.
Right, yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like we don't want to lose both of them guys. All
reputations, man, you know? Like you win titles and do what George is doing, all of a sudden people start looking at, you know, the earlier periods of your career a little differently. And
maybe and then you got the prospects of I don't think I saw this coming, but this somewhat of an exodus from college football to the pros by a lot of coaches. The landscape has changed in college, and it's, you know, it's seemingly has caused guys to want to jump to the NFL. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's a little different. They don't have to recruit.
Nope.
Recruiting is huge. Recruiting has changed. It's a lot different than what it used to be. Kids are a lot different than what they used to be. And I think how these teams, college and pro, are being made up is going to be changing. Like, so I saw a conversation the other day that, you know, with these college coaches leaving for the pros, obviously all of them can't leave. It ain't that many. It's a lot less jobs in pro football than there are in college, but you still have guys leaving. Maybe the colleges start leaning on these high school guys with the relationships with these high schools, and my ace, you know, he's a high school coach coordinator, been for the last 20 some years, and if I were a college coach, I would want his connections, like, off, no question about it. Like, he knows all these kids. He gets them to come to this private school. He knows every single body. Maybe they start leaning that way. And maybe the pros start leaning to these college coaches because they connect with the college kids now. You know, it's a different – the league is getting younger and younger, and the kids are just a little different. The generation is different, and these college coaches know how to connect with them.
Well, if you even look at Philadelphia with Sirianni, what? Sirianni's like 34 years old, right? I mean, he would only be like 2 years older than Schumann. And when you think about Schumann, what he would bring that connection, right? He would bring that connection where he can talk the lingo. He's been there with those guys. He's been in the trenches. He's been training these guys and challenging these guys for the next level. And like you talk about, Graham, I mean, he's kind of like seen as a little kid genius, right? Boy wonder. That's throwing things against the board and making them stick and making things happen. He is one of those guys that are going to continue to be sought after no matter where he goes. And like, I think, like you said, G, earlier, I mean, heck, we're lucky just to have him for another year because he could have gone somewhere else. He could have taken a mid-major job or something like that because his name was that hot.
I got lucky. I went to the media day for Georgia during the national championship game week out in L.A. And, you know, Kirby doesn't let those guys talk to the media much. The assistants only talk to the press a few times a year, and that really happens because Georgia keeps going to the college football playoff. But, you know, Glenn, Coach Schumann was at the podium for about 20 minutes, and people stopped asking him questions, and so he came out on the floor and just started milling around. And I got a chance to kind of corner him and talk to him for a little while. Myself and Bruce Feldman from The Athletic got like 15 minutes of just FaceTime with him. And he's a really impressive guy to talk to, but he said so many things in there that, like, I've never heard anyone say. Like, I was asking him about the Ohio State game, and he was talking about explosive plays and, you know, how Georgia defines explosive plays. But he said for every 10 yards that we give up in explosives, usually that equals a point that we allow as a defense. And I was like, I've never heard that before. You know, I wrote an article about it and tweeted it out, and like some data guy on Twitter got back to me, and he was like, that's interesting. I'm going to pull the data on it. And he started going through and pulling the data on it. And he's like, he's right. It's on the money. But it's just like he is, you know, I mean, that's not something the analytics people have figured out outside of football. Like, that's a dude inside of a, you know, a coaching staff that's found a correlation. And I think that's like a little bit of insight into just how sharp his mind is, right?
Football's Billy Hill.
And I'll have to admit, I'm old school. I kind of push back against the analytics some, you know, especially in the scouting world after I finished playing as a scout. You know, Atlantic's analytics started getting into play a little bit, and like I'm an old school tape guy. Show me what I see on tape. And tape still holds up. Nothing is a better barometer than the tape. But there is some things that analytics has helped with over the years. And I think these younger coaches younger coaches are in the sweet spot. It's kind of like how I feel like I'm in the sweet spot as a man. Being in my 40s, like, I understand analog, I understand digital, I understand. I'm in a sweet spot. I've seen it all. I've played an 8-track, you know, before. I know how to operate an 8-track player. I know how to operate a cassette tape. I know how to operate all of that. I've seen Laserdiscs. I've seen reel. My stepfather had reel to reel. I know what all of that is. Nice. But I also know, you know, how to work all this digital stuff that's come out. You know what I mean? I think that's where these new young coaches are. They understand a little bit of the old school, and they're in this new world too, where they can combine that analytics and all this stuff. And it's making for some interesting coaches. And they also, like the younger coaches, they probably adapt more to the new game as well. Like it's a new game. Yeah, it's a new game now, you know, and they can incorporate a little bit of both.
Well, G, you know what's funny that you say that, and I have to just kind of transition for a second. I listened to the Monken interview, or not interview, but press conference with the Ravens, and everything that we're talking about, he talked about, right? He talked about what he took from Georgia, what he helped provide to Georgia. You know, all the analytics stuff, all the explosive stuff that we're talking about now. But it's funny that you say how you're able to connect with so many different eras of technology. That's how Monken was, right? I mean, it's so interesting how the entire coaching staff really feels that way. And I think they've kind of played off of each other. They built themselves up. I think every coach has elevated who they are in Georgia's room just because of all the talent in that room. It would be, you know, quite honestly, if they had lost Monken and Schumann, I don't know if we would necessarily recover the way that we are going to recover next year, obviously, but, you know, with Monken leaving and going into 23. But losing two coordinators like that, and two guys that were so influential in the program would have been difficult. And I'm going to blame Crean because I don't know if you heard this, Graham. I know you listened to the,
press conference. I saw that.
But Crean, he burns us again.
Get out of town.
That is a long path to revenge, man.
My goodness, man. How are you going to throw my man's name out there?
you got to jig with ESPN. Worry about that.
Yeah, man.
I think you're right about Monken, and I think that's what made him so rare, though, Lamar, is, like, he is a older dude.
Older guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he was willing to input that information, and I think, like, Kirby Smart, even younger coach, but a guy who has been a position coach in the SEC since 2005, I think. Like, you're going back almost 20 years now. And it's really easy when you're very good at your job and you're doing your job at a high level and you've been part of national championship staffs to say, like, I know everything and I don't need to input any more information. And I think that's why Georgia is where Georgia is right now, is because there's a humility that exists to look at everything.
That's right. And
figure out, you know, hey, this isn't how we're going to base everything off of, but we can take a little nugget of information here and get better. But
I feel like there's been mentioned before in the program, like the willingness to evolve and, you know, incorporate certain things, like, you know, because everything change happens constantly, you know, and so you got to be willing to, you know, get out of some of your old ways and some stuff. And I feel like I've heard that before about that program.
Well, see, you know, what's interesting, though, is that people are worried about Bobo being the offensive coordinator. And I think that's the reason. People are concerned, okay, did you learn anything from Monken? Did you learn anything in your previous stops?
Of course he did.
And that's the hope, right? And I believe he has, but that's the hope, right? So, but we're here to let the fans know that I'm sure he has, right? I'm sure that everybody in that room, everybody in that on that coaching staff is progressing tremendously with in light years, light speed, to learning and evolving as time evolves. And it shows, right? Because these guys are coaching outside of themselves when it comes to coaching these guys up. I mean, the NFL GMs are saying these guys are the most prepared players that they've seen in recent years. I mean, Georgia's at another level right now, folks. You might as well get used to it. What were you going to say, Graham?
I was just going to say, I'm curious to hear George's perspective on Mike Bobo, because that's somebody that, you know, you were around. He was on staff when you were a player in Athens. But, yeah, like the things that Mike Bobo were involved with on Todd Monken's staff last year was third down game planning and red zone game planning. Georgia was, I believe, first in the country in third down efficiency, third in red zone points per an opportunity. So that would say that, like, you know, he did his job very well, first of all. But second of all, I think that example that Todd Monken set of this kind of open collaborative staff, like, I sort of think that that's more Kirby Smart's example, because the defense has worked that way in Athens for a long time. There's a lot of people giving input. And so I think the idea that Mike Bobo's coming in and revamping anything, it's the opposite of that. Like, he's there for continuity, in my perspective.
Definitely, you know, continuity is everything. Like, that's the reason you want to keep coaches when you're winning. You know what I mean? So I think Bobo is going to be fine. Bobo, like, people like to discount it. Bobo did a damn good job at Georgia as an offensive coordinator. Yeah, some things could have went better in certain games or whatever, but you putting up, you know, 40 a game, like, if your defense can't help you and you putting up 30, 40 a game, then you got other issues. It ain't on offense. You know what I mean? Nice. So he's bounced around some. He's got a lot of experience, you know, different conferences, you know, different schools, different positions. I think all that makes the man. You know what I mean? I think he also learned from a guy that, you know, has been putting up some numbers the last couple years in Coach Monken. And it's just like, look, man, when Coach Monken first started out, you know, I was like,
people
at were first. At first, I was not a fan. I was like, "What is going on, dude?" You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I could probably search some tweets or whatever. You know, that, like me, like with WTF, like what's going on? You know what I mean? So, but he picked it up. He got his, you know, he got his feet wet and then he dove in. You know what I mean? And like he's been one of the better play callers the last couple of years. You know, we're gonna find out, you know, how much was him, how much was Stetson, how much was, you know, what was what. But, you know, I think we got a good foundation and we got and it always helped to have the Jimmies and the Joes. And we got plenty of those, and that's what wins in college football. If you can't, if you, it's hard. Not saying it don't happen, you know what I mean. But it's mm-hmm. hard to lose a lot when you have the roster that Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, you know, those teams have. It's just hard to lose because nobody else has that.
Yeah, and I think you got to go back to Kirby too, right? Because he built the culture. And when you listen to Monken's press conference and he was talking about it, I think they asked the question, you know, what are you going to do with the tight ends here at with the Ravens? And he said, you know what? He said, look, it's not the same as Georgia as it is here in Baltimore. Just so happened that we had two freaks. We had two unicorns at Georgia, so we had to utilize those guys. And it actually made some guys upset at first, right? The slot guys wanted the ball a little bit more. Some of those other playmakers wanted the ball a little bit more. But just so happened, the tight ends were the best guys in the room. So that's who got the ball. And so the culture allowed these guys to be able to humble themselves to say, hey, you know what? These guys need to get the ball for everybody else to be successful. You can only attribute that to the actual culture that they built in Georgia to allow that to happen. You got to give credit where credit's due. To Kirby Smart. But fellas, we do have a guest, and it is a guest that is very, very appropriate for the moment. He is joining us now. But if you are not aware, there's some news that came out today that DGD, he is a DGD, Jalen Carter was actually, there's a warrant out for his arrest in regarding the accident that took place with Willick. But Graham, I'm going to let you introduce our guest today, and we'll get started on this interview.
Yeah, so like you said, Lamar, you know, kind of a bombshell piece of news this morning around Jalen Carter's, you know, being at the scene of the accident that took the lives of Chandler McCroy and Devin Willick. None of us are attorneys, so we don't want to speak on things that are outside of our expertise. So we have brought in Mr. Billy Olson, who has his own law practice in Athens and is formerly assistant DA in Athens Clark County, to give us a little bit of perspective. Billy, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing well. How are you guys?
Doing all right. Thanks for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you for joining the show.
It's especially short notice. Because I know people be busy.
Yes, no problem, and glad to be on here. How are y'all?
Can I have type of a, I guess, a surface question, because I tend to look at things from a logical perspective, and the law doesn't work like that all the time. You know, it's from my, it doesn't work like that.
Sure.
For me, it's like, okay, allegedly has been speeding and racing and reckless driving, they say, that happened the night of the accident. Fast forward 50 something days later, there's a warrant for his arrest, and so it kind of confuses me, like, what are they trying to put together? What are they looking for? Because to me, it's like, okay, if you knew he was speeding and racing back then, I don't know if they knew that or not. You know, handle it then, you arrest him, cite him, and do all that stuff. Or even if it's a situation where you can cite him later, you know, get the, if there's video or whatever, you cite him. What are they trying to figure out his involvement in this whole deal? I'm kind of confused at the timing and what they're trying to figure out.
Yeah, so I was at the Athens courthouse today, and you know, I don't have any inside scoop, or even if I did, I wouldn't really be able to speak on it. But you know, whether or not this information or the arrest warrants came out today, and the timing of it, and the, you know, what's going on with Jalen Carter, you know, and whether that was orchestrated, I can't speak to that. I know that everybody involved in this, I'm sure, has definitely tried to be as careful as they could, gather evidence. If you're law enforcement, you're going to investigate everything as thoroughly as you can, knowing what's going on here and everybody that's involved, and how those decisions come down and the timing of them, that would be, you know, between, I guess, the prosecutor's office and law enforcement. And a lot of people discussing what it is that they think, you know, in any case, they're going to gather as much evidence as they can, information they can, talk to witnesses, and then say, all right, what do we think, or what laws do we think have been broken here? What charges do we think we could bring? And then make a decision on, you know, what charges to actually go forward with. And so as far as the timing, I have no idea. But, you know, the charges that they have come forward with on this are misdemeanor charges.
And I was going to say, what would classify as evidence here? What would they be looking?
Well, just any, let's video, if there's video evidence from anywhere, you know, near a scene. Obviously, any statements that were given by anybody involved in this or any situation. They go interview witnesses, interview people involved, you know, cameras downtown, cameras along the road. I mean, it can be, you know, they'll look anywhere because there's social media posts. A lot of times, you know, one of the biggest things today that we see are people talking about things afterwards on social media. It happens all the time, and that ends up in court. And so I don't know, you know, again, I don't have information as to how all this went down and that sort of thing, but I would imagine that those involved have, you know, been very careful in reviewing how they're going to move forward
with this situation. I mean, what is kind of the path forward for Carter? Because I know that there's been the misdemeanor charges brought. There's a lot of people that, you know, speaking of social media, there's a lot of people that like to kind of play a lawyer on the internet. I've seen some speculation in certain places about, like, well, you know, this could potentially end up in more severe felony charges, vehicular homicide, potentially. Kind of what would be the determination of whether or not that happens? Or do we think because this is already sort of being passed forward as a misdemeanor, it probably stays that way?
Sure. I mean, anything that I would say here, obviously I'd be speculating on, but they brought, you know, my understanding, and same as y'all's, I'm sure they brought a couple warrants that are misdemeanors. In any case where they've done an investigation and they've taken warrants out, I would be highly surprised if they were to come back later and take out different warrants. Has it happened? I'm sure it has. Would it be unusual? Absolutely. So, you know, the charges that he has now, he would have to at some point get booked in, he would bond out, and it would go through the normal process just like anybody else. I've handled many cases where there are warrants outstanding and you've got to, you know, get your client booked in, get him out, and then you go through the process just like anybody else. You go through arraignment, then the case is put on a calendar call, and then at some point put on a trial. And throughout that process, you try to resolve it if you can. And that'll be what happens here. But, you know, unless there's other information out there or something that nobody knows, which, you know, I can't imagine that there's going to be other charges.
I mean, the question I'm about to ask you is purely speculative. I had a close friend who passed away in a kind of similar type accident years ago, and when that whole process was going out, I remember, you know, there was some questions basically from the DA's office to the family of the deceased around how severely do we, you know, do you want us to kind of prosecute the people that are legally culpable for the situation? Like, is that kind of normal for a situation like this where there's potential that the family would have been consulted, like the Willicks or LaCroix would have been consulted in terms of how Carter may have been charged and how severely?
In any case where there's a victim or alleged victim, they would be consulted. So, I have no idea in this case, but right. In any case, that is a very routine, normal part of the procedure for victims to be, kept up to date, especially when the case gets to a prosecutor's office. Now, whether that happens during the course of an investigation, you know, I don't know. But it is very routine once the case reaches a prosecutor's office, whether that's, you know, a solicitor, state court, or a district attorney's office, that they are in touch with victims. And the victims, there's even a Victims Rights Act. There are certain things that, you know, they're entitled to during this process.
You know, I think a question that a lot of dog fans have, and you're a dog fan yourself, but what is the university's responsibility? Do they have any type of responsibility in this case at all, with Carter being a student athlete, with Chandler LaCroix being actually an employee of the organization and of the university? Is there any responsibility factor that UGA plays in this at all?
Yeah, I can't really speak to that. I mean, there's two sides to anything where there could be a criminal act, and then you have a civil case and civil liability. So you're dealing, you know, it's so complex as far as all that's concerned, you know, and everybody has to, you know, do their part and handle their business. And so, you know, obviously all of those questions will be answered over time, mostly I would think through the civil process that I'm sure, you know, will occur at some point, you know, which is totally, you know, separate really from warrants that are issued and going through the criminal process.
Let me ask you, this might be a silly question, but again, I try to look at things logically, and sometimes they may get in my way. You have a person that was, or persons, I have no idea if Jalen was alone or if he had people in this vehicle. He was in another vehicle, and there was another vehicle with, you know, passengers, LaCroix and, you know, Willick, and I believe they may have some other people in the vehicle too. They are allegedly racing. You know, I know that I know that probably happens a lot on after this, leaving the spot. You see your homeboy, you know, you punch it right quick, and then he said, "Oh, you want to speed and right. blah, blah, blah. you want to race blah blah." So that's, I imagine that's how this happened. Unfortunately, things got out of hand, and one party crashed. The other party, you know, as far as we know, didn't. Outside of the racing, how are those two parties connected? You know what I mean? Like, since they're misdemeanors now, those are separate. Those are his charges, you know, as we know it right now. So I don't think they're trying to conflate the two, but I think like the public is trying to conflate the two, and is there any reason to conflate the two? Like, what does one have to do with the other outside of the racing part?
No, it doesn't really. And I think obviously when you're having a situation where this hit, you know, the news today, and all of a sudden it's, I mean, everybody's talking about it. It's on the front page of, you know, if you go to the website, ESPN, it's right there, bam. And you know, talk shows and everybody, here we are talking about it. It's going to get scrutinized to a level that you don't see on a lot of cases. However, when it comes to the courts and what the law enforcement has to do, and then when it gets into the courts and what those people have to do, it will generally take on its usual course. And, you know, even though all that scrutiny is going on the outside, everybody involved still has their job to do. And so, you know, do these people that get involved in these things know who people are and kind of all of that that's going on? Yes. But for the most part, people are involved in these things, have their job to do, and you hope that those that are doing those jobs are, you know, factoring in everything and doing the job that they should do. You know, and I know that doesn't really answer any questions.
But no, I understand. I kind of, like, when I was thinking through, I was like, I kind of answered my own question.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
like, and unless those two vehicles, you know, made contact, there's just two different, they're two different, right. They're just two different entities.
All you know I mean,
they shouldn't have been racing, obviously, but sure. Outside of that, I don't see how one has to do with the other.
Yeah, and people are going to look at what they read. And let's say, and not to go into specifics of this, because, I mean, you can read what you read, and there's information out there. But I can tell you that the people that have to do this job have looked at all of the facts and circumstances surrounding this incident. And then today we come out with charges. And that they have carefully reviewed all of that and made this decision today. And so, and that would be with any situation. And so I think there was probably a lot of thought. Are y'all there? Sorry, yeah. Cut off. Yeah. You know, a lot of thought going into, all right, well, how are we moving forward? And so this step they took, and in any situation, the steps that they take are thought out. What can we prove? You know, there's a difference between information and evidence that you need to get a warrant, between evidence that you need to move through the courts, and then the evidence you need to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt. Those are all different things. And so they're going to think through each of those and say, all right, this is how I think we should proceed with a case. And so I think today tells you that this is what they think, and how they should proceed. And then the case will now go over to the Solicitor General's office and go from there.
What would kind of be the normal timeline on something like this? Obviously, Carter is a public figure. You have the NFL draft coming up for too long, and, you know, another football season coming around next fall. Does his professional life, would that be something that the courts would, you know, kind of try to expedite this for any reason, or could it actually slow this down?
No, neither really. I mean, it will take general course and cases do. Now, there are things lawyers can do to speed things up. You can file a motion for speedy trial, which means that the prosecutors have to try a case within a certain amount of time. There are other cases in courts right now in Athens involving high-profile cases that have been lingering a while. That's part of strategy on the lawyer's behalf. How quickly do we want to move, knowing that your client might be in a position that he needs to get this resolved quickly? But then again, a lot goes into that, because you can take over your case over to the prosecutor's office, sit down with them, try to work something out. If you're not getting the answers that you want, you have to wait on the courts to a certain extent, right? So in the state court in Athens, Clark County, it's proved fairly quickly compared to other courts. So you can get into court on arraignment within a few months of an arrest. And then within a few months of that, that case could be put down on essentially a trial calendar. So within 6 to 12 months, you could be into court moving your case forward. And you could do it sooner than that if everybody's in agreement. But the case will not get any special treatment by the courts just because of the case itself. It will go through the normal process. But there is things that a lawyer can do to try to speed it up or slow it down.
Like, well, Billy, there ain't anything about like another, you know, dog and Adam Anderson, unless I missed it. You know, I haven't heard anything concrete about his case. And it's been, what, it's a couple years now?
Yeah, I think, I want to say like a year and a half, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, so it could be a while. What I hate to happen, you know, to Jalen, you know, considering if the misdemeanors are what sticks and what's the final call, is a situation like, you know, Lyle Collins. I don't know if, you know, Billy is familiar with his case, but there was a real deal case, and like there was speculation about him, about a young lady got, you know, I think she may have died or whatever, and he had nothing to do with it, and he failed in that draft. Like,
yeah,
he felt like he was a first round pick, and he totally failed,
right?
And like, and ended up being for nothing. You know what I mean? So,
and that's what's so hard about these things, because, you know, people can talk, and obviously the court of public opinion, right? And so everybody can look at this, and everybody can give their opinion, and everybody can say all these things, and then what happens in the courtroom can be a completely different result, and a lot of that will work against the person that's charged, and it's sad. And people's lives can get ruined over, you know, false allegations or just being overcharged with something, you know? And so, yeah, it happens, and it's sad. And that's why you hope you have people that make these decisions are doing a good job.
Well, you know, that's how that stuff,
you know, so.
Billy, I mean, you mentioned strategy, and Graham actually brought up the NFL draft and everything else. And I think what a lot of people look at, it's very ironic. On the day that they actually are in Indianapolis, he's about to go on stage, and all of a sudden, boom, it gets released. Is this strategic, in your opinion? I know you can't give, you know, give a definitive, but could this be strategic on their end as well?
Just based on, you know, being here in Athens a long time, I would be very surprised if it was. I'll just say that. I mean, I just don't, you know, knowing what I know, I would be surprised. I just would be, you know, and I think it's easy to go there and say, well, geez, I mean, the coincidence, and but I just don't think.
Yeah. And I only ask the question because when you have looked at the NFL draft historically, there have been guys that have fallen. And all of a sudden, something was released right around the combine, right after the combine, and guys just tumble. And some good team ends up picking up that guy. You know, his life is resurrected and everything else, and he's on a good team. But, I mean, you never know what happens. Conspiracy theorists are out there.
I just well, right. And so when's the draft again? April, whatever? So,
April 25th, I mean, or something.
You could make the argument, too, though, that by doing it now and allowing this thing to get resolved before the draft could help. So, I mean, you could spin it however you want. I mean, and that's why I don't, honestly, I would be very surprised if anybody involved in this, bringing this decision, actually sat around and talked about the draft or any of what was going on with the combine. I would be surprised.
Yeah, with the law, dealing with the law is a little different. There are people that put out affiliated with these teams that put out little nuggets of negativity about some guys just to, so they can possibly fall to them, you know. But it's the timing was interesting, but just having to sit with it for a little while. And when you think about it, you know, there's really no reason because this is not coming down from the rest of the league or the NFL. This is coming down from the law.
And how does law enforcement gain from that? I mean, I just
exactly.
And you're talking to a criminal defense lawyer, so I'm not. you know, it's like, you know, but I don't think that. I could be wrong. I mean, anytime, obviously, you have the amount of money we're talking about here and the impact that it can have. And I take nothing away from the whole situation, and I don't want to, you know, but there's just a lot that can factor into it. But when it comes to that, I don't think that was the case.
So, final question for you. Let's just assume that Carter ends up convicted of these two misdemeanors that he's being charged with. What would kind of be the normal consequences, legal punishment for that?
Sure. Obviously, I can't speak to specifics of this case. Anytime you're charged with a misdemeanor, the legal answer is going to be, and you have to tell your client, you could face up to 12 months in jail and a $1,000 fine for each misdemeanor, okay? Now, what happens on a general case, if somebody doesn't have any history and they have a reckless driving charge, racing, you know, you could, you know, and again, I'm not speaking to the specific of this case or saying anything about this is what he's facing, but, you know, generally speaking, on those types of charges, you could be looking at some minimal jail time, if any at all, and probations and some fines and doing some, you know, defensive driving classes or doing some community service and things along those lines. I mean, that's generally what you would be looking at. But obviously, you know, whoever lawyer gets involved in this and you, as a lawyer getting involved in a case, you're going to do everything you can to help your client get the best possible result that you can get for your client. But I mean, that in a very general sense, based upon a racing and a reckless driving and dealing with, I don't know how many over the years. I mean, it's a, you know, it's kind of the general sense of what you'd be looking at.
And according to being just looking at your last statement. So it happens a lot, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you know, reckless driving, sure. And, you know, a lot of times you see reckless driving, you know, let's say somebody gets a DUI and you can somehow get that reduced to a reckless driving. That, generally speaking, on a DUI is a good result, can be a good result, because then you don't have that DUI conviction. And so I think that's another important piece of all of this. Nobody in this, you know, was charged with DUI. Otherwise, you might be looking at a different set of circumstances. But, yeah, I mean, reckless driving is a traffic violation. Racing is a traffic violation. They are in a criminal code. But, you know, on those types of charges, you're not, generally speaking, you're not looking at significant jail time and significant punishments. Again, I'm not speaking to this case specifically.
Well, Billy, we thank you for joining us and actually giving your expertise in this case. I know a lot of fans really wanted to kind of hear something ASAP because it affects, you know, all of Dog Nation. You know, you want the kid to go on and do well. And we're also all grieving as to what actually happened in the case. So, but thank you for joining us. We truly appreciate you blessing the show.
Sure thing. Thanks.
Appreciate you coming on, Billy.
That was a good conversation with Billy Olson. You know, it was good to get someone on the show with some expertise, right? There's been a lot of speculation. Everybody's going back and forth in chats and Facebook, Twitter, you know, office cooler talk and that all that sort of thing. But to really hear from somebody who has a legal expertise, I think that kind of helps a little bit. I think as the case goes further, you know, after Jalen actually turns himself in on this warrant and, you know, things kind of play out, it'll help everybody kind of move forward in this case.
So we got, you know, obviously excellent legal expertise there from Billy. Mm-hmm. George, you've been in draft rooms, war rooms, yeah. You know, discussing these types of situations and like how obviously, you know, that just being charged with a crime, there's obviously levels of severity, but you know, a situation like this one, how do you think your average NFL GM is going to look at this, and what are they going to want to know? What are they going to talk about with their staffs?
Honestly, I think it depends on how good the player is. Hmm. So with a guy like Carter, I think they're going to monitor this every single day. down to the wire, because you're talking about, you know, with the type of player he is, you're talking about a valuable pick, and a, you know, so they're going to monitor very close and down to the wire. All the background for these guys has been, what is February? Yeah, all the background has been done. You know, they know everything about these guys. they've been to these guys' neighborhoods, elementary schools, high schools, like in the college, talk to a janitor, talk to a lunch lady. Like, it's all been done. But then you have something like this comes up, and then you go back to the, you know, table and you decide. I imagine that how it goes, you know, like some things going to be above what my pay grade was, you know what I mean? But I imagine like GMs and security people, head coach would probably dig in, try to find out what we just tried to find out from Billy. You know what I mean? Like, what's the outcome? What's the worst case scenario? What's the best case scenario? Like, you don't want to pick a guy that you never get. You'd also, you know, you got to decide, do you want to pick a guy that you might miss for a little while? Is it worth having, you know, a generational player miss a couple months? You know what I mean? You might decide that it's worth it for you as a team, you know, especially if the kid is clean everywhere else. You know what I mean? So, like I said, the work has been done. You just, it's a tough spot to be in.
Well, and I mean, that's kind of the, I think the question for the public at large is going to be like, is this an isolated incident or is it indicative of a pattern of behavior? Now I think we're all pretty close to the Georgia program. There was a lot of blowback when Todd McShay labeled Carter as having character issues back in December. Mm-hmm. It should be noted that that was long before this incident, right?
Prior to the incident.
Yeah. I guess I'm just curious, like, if you're an NFL GM, you're using a first-round draft pick, potentially a top 10 draft pick on a guy like this, you, I'm assuming, have private security people that have dug into
they dig in. I remember when we would dig in on Tavon Austin, we drafted him pretty high. We know he's from it. Honestly, a lot of stuff can get stereotypical. You know, if you get a guy from, you know, from rough part of town, rough neighborhoods, you know, I got to have rough family members, you know, these teams know where family members sell drugs, been to jail, you know, violence, like they know it all. But what I will say and what I've kind of noticed over the years is that it's funny how guys with rough edges get perceived, because what I've watched happen to a lot of guys is the guys with the rough edges, they don't want to go back to that. And so they get to the league and you don't hear a peep from them. You get some of these silver spoon guys that get to the league and have issues. You know what I mean? Like a Johnny Manziel, or, you know, like that, you know, like never really wanted for anything, you know what I mean? Didn't need football to be well off. And you get to the NFL and you see, you know, how that works out for some guys, you know, some of the guys that you would think, or that you would assume, or that you would label to be, you know, problem guys, you know, never causing any problems. You know what I mean? Because they know where they came from, and they're not trying to go back. They understand the privilege that is to play in the NFL and to make the type of money that they're making and to get these type of opportunities. You know what I mean? So that's an interesting part of it too. You can't, and I've been in those rooms. Some coaches and personnel people, they don't quite understand the guys. Some, they don't understand culturally, you know what I mean? And so some guys are dropped off the board, you know, just straight up. It's like, we ain't even going to talk about him. You know what I mean? Boom, take his card down. We put him over here. We don't want to deal with that. You know what I mean? Could be a good guy. You know, could be a good guy. I've seen that happen. You know, guys get league at sale, never had any issues about him, you know, but they were taken off the board.
You know, I mean, Tunsil, so, right? That happened to him on draft night. Like, the Ravens took him off the board, but the Ravens were also coming right off the heels of dealing with the Ray Rice incident.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah. I think that makes a difference too, right? It's just like, what's the current public perception of the organization, and have they had any recent kind of high profile issues as well?
And the organization's ability to be able to withstand the pressure. I mean, you got some, in my opinion, you got some organizations in big time media markets, New York, you know, LA, Houston might be considered one, something like that. I mean, you might not want to handle that.
Like Bill Belichick, he could pick Jalen with no problem. Like nobody would question it. Nobody would, you know, care. I think somebody like, you know, Jerry Jones, he'll smooth talk it if he get asked any issues, any questions or whatever. Knowing just the basics of what we know right now, it's some teams down in that top 10 and 15 licking their chops.
Yeah,
hoping, yeah, they're hoping something happens, because they see, you know, they see misdemeanor. They're like, oh, we can deal with that.
Right.
some teams may not want to. Some teams just don't even want the possibility of anything going wrong, or they can't afford the possibility of anything going wrong, so they don't want to do it. You know what I mean? You got GMs fighting for their jobs, head coaches fighting for their jobs. Everybody wants to make the right decision. You know what I mean? If it goes right, you're gonna be king of the hill. If it goes wrong, you know, they're gonna be coming for your neck. You know what I mean? So it's that part to think about too.
How much capital have you built up in your own career with your own fan base and all that? It's fascinating how much kind of comes into play with all this. I mean, for you personally, like, you know, with this situation, if you were, you know, back in a NFL front mm-hmm. office like you used to be, mm-hmm. how would you read it? Or, you know, what would your recommendation be?
I can only read it for what it is, you know, so far. Like, if he gets booked on those two misdemeanors, you know, and you have to couple that with your interviews with the kid, you know, and the rest of the background, you know, if he's clean and you've had an interview where you got to know the kid and you understand him, you understand what makes him click, and he fits with you, I say you go ahead and take him. You know, I say you go ahead and take him. You know, if you got this and you put it with, you know, an interview you didn't like, or like, you know, like you got a guy on the top 30 interview, and, you know, he comes in the building, he's, you know, he's big time, and, you know, the lunch staff, he's not a nice dude. He gets in, you don't like what he does on the board in your meeting. You know what I mean? Cause they definitely put these guys on the board when they get them in with the position coach. You don't like what you saw on the board. You don't do all of that. And you couple it with this, you might stay away. You know what I mean? It's still about the whole picture when it comes to things like this. You know, still got to factor in everything.
Well, see, I think that's where the Todd McShay comments actually come into play here. Because although it was a few months prior to this happening, you still have him citing character issues, which a lot of players, former teammates, coaches, and everybody else has come out and said, you know what, come on, that's fabricated. We've seen nothing of the sort. But then when you couple that, George, with this incident, and like you said, depends on what the interviews have spoken, you know, what he said in the interviews. Has he said anything different than what he's going to actually tell the police officers or what he has told the police officers? Has he told a different story? That's where I think as the viewing public, as dog fans or as NFL fans, you'll start to see a true story start to develop where you can see what was really spoken about and happening. Because if a guy starts to stumble and he's stumbling all throughout, you know, that draft and he's going from a potential number one to 15 to 20, there's been some other things that nobody else has seen, heard, and have actually thrown the red flag for character issues in terms of, you know, maybe lies or something like that. But but it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an interesting watch. You know, I wish the kid the best. Obviously, we all want him to have the best opportunity. It's just completely unfortunate that any of this is coming about. And I just had to ask that question, man, because everybody said the same thing. You know, it's very ironic. On this day, you know, you want to throw his name out there, and I'm sitting there and I'm in my office and I'm watching Nolan. Heck, you had sent the text about Nolan getting up there talking about Willick, and then all of a sudden you see this thing pop up as a breaking news story that Jalen Carter has had a warrant issued for his arrest. It actually threw everybody back, but we hope everything turns out for the best.
There'll always be a little bit of, you know, guys taking up for the guys, coaches wanting to paint the program in a positive light. But you got to understand that people also want to keep their name good too. So I would tend to lean on what his peers say about him and what the coaches say about him. Because the coach is definitely not going to put their neck on the line for a bad kid. That ain't going to happen. You know what I mean? And like, if you got a guy on your team that you don't like, you're looking at him. Oh, man, nobody wants the jerk to succeed. Nobody wants the jerk to be the number one pick with $20 million, $30 million in his pocket. You know what I mean? So you're not going to boost that guy up. You know what I mean? If he's not, you know, the authentic real deal. And there have been nothing but great things said about the guy.
Yeah, and I mean, Kirby Smart shouted him out specifically and very, you know, I think poignantly at that parade celebration, you know, earlier in the day before the accident, and talked about him coming back for that Tennessee game. And I remember, you know, Carter got hurt at Missouri on a pretty questionable play, kind of looked like a dirty play by Mizzou, where, you know, he sprained an MCL, I believe it was. And I know for a fact that there was a lot of people in his ear encouraging him to sit out the rest of the season. And, you know, there was a question there for a little while of how is he going to rehab this thing, you know, and like, can we count on him to be back? And I, you know, about a week after that sort of started, I remember talking to a source and they were like, no, like we're counting on Jalen to be ready to play against Florida. And, you know, he was out there on some third downs in that game. And then against Tennessee, he's, you know, back wreaking havoc full time. But I think, you know, from an internal Georgia spot, and I mean, this is just my own secondhand knowledge, obviously, but like, I think that they looked at that in a like really favorable way. And I think that was a turning point in the season for them where they felt like, hey, if we lose this dude, you know, we might not be able to achieve everything that we are hoping to achieve. And if he turned down money that was being offered to him by agents to sit out the rest of the year and just start working on the draft process to try and finish what he started with his teammates. And I think, you know, those are things that should be considered in all of this as well. the reality, right, is like, I think you said this earlier, George, but, you know, if this incident happens and a car doesn't crash, we never know about it as public. And that doesn't mean that it's, you know, that doesn't make it right by any means or whatever, but it just, you know, I think that's also worth remembering, is that if you didn't have this tragedy attached to what happened, then we would react to it the same way that we reacted to the Dubas Johnson news, that, you know, he was arrested for similar charges, which it was like, well, he's probably going to run some extra stairs this off season, and there's going to be some internal punishment, but he's not out hurting anybody. You know, he's not doing anything malicious. Right. This isn't, you know, this is kind of kids being kids. I think the question that I would ask both of you guys is, Georgia as a football program kind of moving forward, like, how do you think they should, or how do you think they will kind of handle this with their team? Because there have been a couple incidences now connected to speeding and racing, and, you know, has this become kind of a teachable moment in your opinion?
To me, yeah. It's a learning lesson. There's no doubt about it.
It's gonna be brought up in these off-season meetings for sure. You know, especially at Georgia, you know, it shouldn't have to be brought up. It's right there in your face. You know, you lost a teammate, you lost a staffer, you had another guy, you know, arrested for it. And look, two guys, one late, you know, in Jalen, arrested for, you know, speeding, reckless driving. And you got, you know, Dumas Johnson, you know, arrested for his, you know, driving. Like, it's the writing should be on the wall. Hey, slow your ass down. Don't drink and drive. You know, it's pretty simple. You know what I mean? But you have to reiterate it sometime to youngsters. And I've been 18 before in college. I've been 21 in college. You know, I've probably done some things I shouldn't have. But, you know, and then, you know, I made it through. But, you know, be smart. Be smart. Don't do those things, because it can end up, we've seen the worst that could happen.
And Graham, I think some people are going to learn. Some people aren't. It's just part of life. But I think what ends up happening with Georgia being so high profile, with college football being another religion, with Georgia being another religion for some people, you look at it with a heightened eyes, you know, with a heightened emotions, right? So if anything happens, everybody's vested, everybody's tied in, everybody wants to find out what's going on. Then they want to blame the program. They want to blame Kirby. They want to blame everybody associated with it. People are going to make individual choices too. And like George said, they're going to bring him in. They're going to sit him down. They're going to show this. Heck, they're going to showcase it on the board. If Jalen ends up falling for whatever reason,
oh yeah,
they're going to showcase that to the current guys that are going to be seniors next year, guys that are prospective NFL players. They're going to say, look, this is the ramifications of your actions when you do things you're not supposed to do. I talked to quite a few people that said, you know what, if I were him, or if I was any prospective player right now, all I would do was work out and sit at home. That's what I would do. But I mean, I'm not that kid. I'm not 20, yeah, 21, when you 22 were 18, years old.
Would you have done that?
Exactly. Though, I wouldn't have done the same thing. You know, I mean, I pledged a frat, and where was I at? All across the United States doing things I shouldn't have done using my status as a new frat member, right? I mean, it's just what happens. And kids are going to be kids, but you hope that they learn from this, and you hope that it's a learning lesson, not just for him or for the university or for those players, but actually anybody else that's coming up that wants to become a football star or anything else. You know, you just hope that people learn from it. But I think it'll be a learning lesson for sure though.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I've seen, you know, social media can be a really fun place. Can also be a really toxic cesspool of bad faith opinions and arguments. You know, I've seen the kind of like Georgia has culture issues accusation thrown around today. And the first thing I would say is that, like, you know, the people like Kirby Smart, for example, like, you know, you're talking about a man who had tight, tight personal relationships with two people who lost their lives. And I can promise you that's affected him in a profound way, you know, and will continue to. I would also say, you know, when I was growing up, I kind of alluded to this earlier. Growing up in Wilmington, North Carolina, there was a guy that I was friends with and kind of looked up to that was a few years older than I was. And he came home from his first semester of college at the University of North Carolina. And he got in a car with his buddy and they'd been drinking and they were just driving across the neighborhood and hit a speed bump, car flipped. He went out and passed, you know, and it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. And it also became a thing that for years forward, anytime we were out somewhere and had been drinking, you know, even at ages where it wasn't legal for us to drink, like, you know, nobody would let anybody get behind the wheel of a car because it was like, hey, remember what happened to Harper, right? And I think, you know, maybe that could possibly be the end result of this that creates some good maybe for Georgia, you know, and for just regular students around Athens or anybody who's following this story is just the reminder of the value of a life and how fragile lives are. But I would say, you know, the news did come out that Chandler LaCroix obviously had been under the influence when this accident happened, which is,
and you hate that.
Yeah,
you really hate that, you know, because she held other people's lives in her hand as much as well as her own. You know what I mean? Her right. parents and her loved ones had to deal with that, and also, you know, the parents and loved ones of, you know, passengers that, you know, their lives were in someone else's hands. You know what I mean? And so you hate that all this happened. And so you just hope that everyone can learn from it and, you know, and everyone left behind can, you know, be okay moving forward. You just hope that they can be.
Yeah, and I think the, you know, because she was a university employee and because she was driving a car that was rented in the university's name after hours, it creates a easy situation for people to, you know, attach responsibility in places where it doesn't really exist.
Yeah, so, you can't like, well, you know, nobody, you know, she grabbed those keys wherever they were,
exactly,
and got in the car, and you know. And an unfortunate tragedy happened. You know, yeah. I don't like it's kind of like you can't, like, she was an adult.
Well, I mean, any organization, especially a large organization, like, I mean, like, I've worked in management in places, and you can have policies and procedures and rules in place, but you can't make people follow them. You can't watch people all the time to make sure that those are being followed. And also, you know, I do want to be 100% clear in saying, like, Chandler LaCroix, by all accounts, was a terrific person who had a magnetic personality that people loved and
were all that to. We know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People, we've all made mistakes, and not all of our mistakes end up, you know, in the front page of the news, but
definitely.
I don't want this to come across as anyone, you know, trying to disparage her good name or anything like that. Because
no, we're just talking about what happened.
Exactly. I just want
it is what it is. You know what I mean? It's unfortunate that it happened, but it is what it is. Everyone, you know, involved was, you know, were adults, and, you know, they would have to. You know, they paid, a couple people paid the ultimate price, you know. You know, if none of this happened and they get pulled over, they still would have to pay a price. You know what I mean? You know, it's just what happened. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, you know, I don't think you can blame anyone else for the actions of, you know, an adult.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think my ultimate hope is that everybody's just respectful the entire process. You know, you kind of look back on things that did happen, whether you're a fan or not, whether you have different opinions, just be respectful the entire process. There's a lot of lives two lives that can still be impacted. And I think if you're truly a fan, and if you're truly those that that care about people, you would be one of those individuals that say, hey, we just want the best outcome for everybody involved. But it's kind of toxic sometimes, like you just said, Graham. You know, sometimes you're on social media, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook chats or whatever it may be, you just got toxic people. You know, some people just want to see the world burn. They're just those type of individuals. So you just got to cancel them out and continue to move forward. But hey, we were going to get into some other things tonight, but I think we should probably end it there. Otherwise, we can go down the rabbit hole of Georgia basketball, which is not a very good topic right now.
Hey, hold on. I understand, but we got to put it in perspective.
What's your perspective right now?
What's their record?
16-13, 16-14
Yeah, bro, they're about 500 after 16-26.
Like, true.
Yeah, like come on, like true. The Crean era was my goodness.
I mean, last year they were 16-26, right?
Yeah, like this is the worst
winning percentage ever by an SEC team over the course of a full season.
Yeah,
man. Yeah, like this is you know. And they got some good recruits coming in, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And the thing about college basketball is, man, is if you get guys playing good basketball, good team basketball, efficient basketball, disciplined basketball, you can go far without superstars.
Yeah, facts.
If, you know, like, I don't know if St. Mary's got anybody that's in the NBA from the last couple of years.
But, yeah.
They gave teams hell, you know, obviously.
I agree.
It was St. Mary's, right? When the St.
Mary's? Yeah, St. Mary's. St. Mary's gives people hell.
If you can play good basketball, you know, St. Mary's ain't going to get the guys that Georgia can get. You know what I mean? Right. And they can, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, I think it's looking up. You know what I mean? You got to say it's looking up. You went from 6 wins to 16. So, for, like, is the season over? There should be a couple games.
No,
one game left, and then you have the SEC tournament.
Right. So, yeah. they need to regular win one season. More game to secure finishing above 500, which I think would be a tremendous accomplishment.
Big accomplishment compared to last year. How are you a major college program winning 6?
Tom Crean, that's how.
Like, see, that don't matter. I don't care how. Like, the worst team in the conference got to win over 6.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I think for Georgia, you know, I don't know. Anybody that says Georgia fans don't care about basketball hasn't lived in my Twitter mentions for the last 3 years. Like, people care and people want to see.
People care. Team. And, I was lucky enough to be there when we had some good teams with Jim Herrick. You know, it was fun to go to those games and watch on the girls' side too. Like, I remember we beat Tennessee at Stegman while I was there with Pat Summit and them. Like, it was a good time. Georgia has the state of Georgia can produce some of the best basketball talent in the country. If all those guys stayed in the state, I'm not saying they had to go to Georgia, but if most of those guys stayed in the state, one of those teams can make a run.
Right. No doubt.
Hell, you got somebody like Kennesaw State that's balling out of control this year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they might make the tournament, right? I think Kennesaw State might make the tournament.
If Georgia can keep two of the top 10 or 15 players in the state home every year, then they will be competitive. And I think where they're at is like, it's, they just need a couple dominoes to fall and then the inertia will take over. And
it could have happened. Like, you get those misses. Like, you know, like I remember back when we were supposed to have Lou Williams and Mike Mercer.
Yeah.
And then Lou goes to the league. Like, that was a domino that could have started. That could have started something right there, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, Lou and Mike, they were really good. They were teammates at North Gwinnett, committed to Georgia, and then one goes to the NBA. It's like, dang, you know, so that could have started something.
I mean, this team that Mike White has this year is the core of it is the same as the team that was there last year. And he, you know, did a good job of bringing in some guys in the portal that were at mid-major schools, but he also like had to go identify that talent. And let's be honest, like, you know, he couldn't go to the transfer portal and grab high profile guys coming from other Power Five programs because those guys had better options than what Georgia could offer. So my point in saying all that is we have seen Mike White get more, I think, out of this team than the sum of its parts. Like, you know, I think he's done a good job of, and the scouting report on Georgia got out in the middle of the year and things started to get tougher during league play. But like in the beginning of the season, before anyone had the book on how to stop Georgia and who some of these guys were, like those dudes were balling, man. Like, you know,
here's the deal. You can't say Georgia underachieved. And that's fine with me.
Right. Yeah.
That's fine. Like you can't say they underachieved.
Oh, like that, you can say they overachieved.
You know, if you look at the roster, at max, they are a, you know, above 500 team, just above. And like, and that's what they went.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they did. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think, I mean, Mike White, let's be honest, like there was a lot of coaches hired in the SEC this past season. Mike White's the only one that was hired by anybody who had gone to an Elite Eight before, who had won. You know, I mean, he took Florida to the tournament, I believe, 5 years in a row. Like, that dude is a proven commodity in this league. He's been coach of the year in three different conferences, and he's a young guy. Like, so I think there's a lot to be excited about, and I would give credit also to Georgia fans for, I think, showing up.
Continuing to support.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, Georgia's record at home this year has been pretty stellar, which is – that's the starting point, right? Like, that is the starting point in college basketball, is to win on your home floor, and then you start trying to go and win on other people's floor. So there's been some good foundation laid, and I'm definitely excited to see – what the offseason looks like for him. And also, you never know, man. They might make a little run in this SEC tournament next week.
Well, a run would just propel them for next year. Yeah. You know, you got to have that good energy
all the way, but one or two wins would be
most definitely a great achievement. Yeah. And you know, and when you watch them, they're actually fun to watch. They're entertaining to watch. Mm-hmm. They give effort. You know what I mean? They get outside of themselves sometimes, and that's what happens with a team that's not completely talented, not working cohesively, but you know they want to achieve, and I think that's what happens when they get outside of themselves sometimes. And like George said, you know, basketball is one of those games that if you it can change quickly from year to year. Let's put it that way. If you get the right guys, the right mindset, and kids believing in each other and feeding off of each other, it can change relatively quickly. It's just a matter of who you have, you know, what pieces you have. You got to have some horses. They don't all have to be five stars. It's not like football. You don't have to have all the Jimmys and Joes, but you got to have some Joes. And if you're going to have Joes, everybody's a Joe. If you got some Jimmys, everybody's a Jimmy, but you just can't have a bunch of guys just doing their own thing. So
one dude can change the whole thing, man. I mean, Gordon Hayward, right? Like, took Butler to the championship game of the NCAA tournament.
That's the thing about basketball. Like, you ain't gotta have seven dudes. Yeah. You know what I mean? Get you a couple dudes that can't nobody guard. Get some guys that can defend, that buy into your defensive philosophy. And like you can make a run. And, like, people be looking for, like, you know, football season is over. You know what I mean? People be looking for something to do on campus. Like, we used to go in, like, when our girls would play Tennessee, like, that thing would be filled to the top.
Gymnastics.
You know, back when I was, you know what I mean? Like, give people something to cheer for in the other sports. And, they, you know, if the basketball starts winning again, like, it's going to get Stedman to get pumped up.
Absolutely. You build it, and they will come.
We should give a quick shout out to the women's basketball program as well.
They're doing great too. You know,
they've been on.
I have a niece up there on the team. She's not playing right now, nice. But you know, but they're you know, they've been doing good too. Coach, what I forget her name that quick. They call her Coach
Coach Abramson Henderson.
Yep. Coach Abe.
Coach Abe. That's what they call it. Abe.
Coach Abe.
Coach Abe. Yep. Coach Abe. Yep. Coach Abe's doing a good job with that squad too. So.
Yeah, they play tomorrow at 4 p.m. in SEC tournament against Auburn. But, I mean,
the girls?
Yeah. But, I mean, if you look at their schedule, right, like they lost to Texas A&M by 2 points on January 22nd, which was coached by Joni Taylor, their former coach. And then they won two in a row, lost a heartbreaker in overtime to a LSU team that has
man
lost all year.
Like, they played them girls tough.
Yeah, they did. And then they really won tough. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They won 7 straight and then played at South Carolina on Sunday and lost to the number one team in the country by 10. So, like, I do believe you get them into March, they can give anybody a run for their money. Like, they're capable of making a deep run.
Nice. Yes. Like, it's good, man. I can't believe the SEC got two teams like LSU and South Carolina. That's crazy.
And Tennessee's not one of them. How crazy is that?
That's real. Yeah. Yeah. A perennial title holder. All right, fellas. It's been real, as always, hanging out with you boys. But let's get up out of here. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. We try to go every 2 weeks now while the offseason's going on. And as we draw closer to the NFL draft and things like that, we'll talk a little bit more about these prospects. And hopefully we have some good news to talk about with maybe the men's basketball team and the women's basketball team doing some things here in the tournament. But as always, see you at 100 Sanford, and go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dawgs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.